Well, my thoughts are about the men who have served our country. Of course, this is Memorial Day, and we have gratitude and respect for those who have paid the ultimate price in doing love of country, serving their country, for which this day and weekend honors. And I believe that several of you here have served in the military. Can I see a show of hands of our veterans? Thank you very much. Appreciate your service to our country. Now, what I'm going to say, I'm not acknowledging war as a healthy activity. But I do acknowledge the men and women that, in their spirit of service, dedicated themselves to the cause of self-sacrifice. The Christian cause is a cause of self-sacrifice, is it not? Laying aside our own wants and desires to an effort greater than just oneself. So I say to you that have served, that are serving as Christians and have served their country, hats off to you all. But unfortunately, warfare has been an intimate part of man's history, has it not? It continues to this very day. We as Christians involved in our own warfare. And our warfare is perhaps the most complex, demanding, and sophisticated type of warfare that has ever been faced by mankind. My purpose today is to explore the subtleties of the spiritual and psychological warfare that we face as Christians. Its implementations, the techniques, the countermeasures, if you will. If we want to put a title on today's sermon, it will be "Beware of the Voices." Be a judger of the voices. Always be aware that there are voices of choice that are bombarding us night and day. And that often they're not our own voices, nor are they the voice of our loving God. I know Larry was in Vietnam, and I'd like to say that I served my country too, but not in the military service. I was 4F. I'll tell you a little bit about that later. But I was in a very tough environment during the Vietnam War, during the entire conflict. That's right. I fought the war of Bell Gardens High School. It was a pretty tough campus in the early 1970s. And it was tough duty. I assure you, it really was. For I had chosen the position as a hawk. There were what called hawks, and there were doves. Hawks were those that were pro-military, pro-U.S. effort, and doves were the ones that were more of the peaceniks and hippies and the like. Friends, I've had this haircut since 1967. Okay, this was not an appropriate haircut for the early 1970s. It was war. I'd chosen that position as a hawk, pro-war, not very popular. But I was the anchor on, we had a closed-circuit television channel, and I was the news anchor. We had a news program, and I was the news anchor. And being a news anchor, I had the opportunity to give editorials at the end of the news broadcast. And I've grown since then. They were a little silly and maybe not well thought out, but they went something like this. You know, these commies don't even play baseball. Can you believe it? Why, you're not even a human being if you don't play baseball. And if we don't stop those commies in Vietnam, nation after nation is going to fall like dominoes. The communists are going to go down the Malay Peninsula. They're going to go to Australia, New Zealand, then up to Hawaii, and they will be attacking the shores of Huntington Beach and eliminating surfing and baseball. We've got to put a stop to it. We must drop hydrogen bombs on Hanoi immediately, and if not that, at least put hydrogen bombs along the demilitarized zone to stop the communists. I used to argue on the debate team the merits of our continued involvement in Vietnam. On the dove team, or the peace team, was a very intelligent guy with long hair, and he would wear like a military fatigues with a little peace sign on it and that kind of a thing. He would argue for the dove side. His name was Mike Smajanovich. And we had our debates, and Mike would come up with a very good argument. So I learned if you can't win an argument, then just attack the messenger. So I would say, you know what, smell on your itch. I would change his name from Smiljanovic to Mr. Mike Smiljan, your itch. You're wrong. And everybody would laugh. And he would be humiliated, and I'd kind of have my victory. He would always lose it. That's not fighting fair in debate. But I was 4F. I wanted to be potentially in the military. I thought about it. I had gotten in a fight with another student when I was a sophomore, and he hit me over the back with a board in the midst of it, and I lost a kidney. So it was a rough childhood, okay? It really was. But I decided I wanted to serve my country. I've never lost a desire to serve my country. I've done it in other ways in recent years here. But back then, since they wouldn't take me in the military, I joined the California Conservation Corps. I was going to do something to serve my country. I have a heritage of people who have served and loved their country. And so I did get a commendation from President Nixon for my volunteer service with the California Conservation Corps. But men in general like to brag about their service experiences. And certainly my father, William George Lucenhide III, I am the fourth. I have a son, William George Lucenhide V. My father was no different. My dad served in the Navy during World War II aboard the USS Alpine, APA 92. And this is an actual picture of his ship that he was on. It was not a big ship. It was actually what they call an attack transport ship. And when I was a kid, we would watch a program called Victory at Sea. Maybe any of you remember the program Victory at Sea? And it had very inspiring music to all the different battle scenes there, narrated by Leonard Graves, who would have that deep bass voice and go, "And now, Victory at Sea." And I've seen every Victory at Sea episode 30 times because my dad made me watch. Right? We would play chess. I enjoyed it. It was kind of a bonding father-son thing. We would play chess and watch Victory at Sea. He would tell me of his war remembrances. Now, my father, even though this was not a major ship or it was not an aircraft carrier, saw major action, very major serious action during World War II. He was a fire control officer. He worked on the 3-inch gun. He was part of the crew that served on that. And they were in the Battle of Leyte Gulf. These were very pinnacle, pivotal battles for the Battle of the Pacific. And also they were there at the Battle of Okinawa. Two times the Alpine was hit by kamikazes. My dad had a scar across his eyebrow. Part of his eyebrow was missing. And at Leyte Gulf, when a kamikaze, here's a picture of a kamikaze hitting ship. They do suicide missions. Things fly all over the place. And my dad lost a piece of his eyebrow from a piece of shrapnel. They bundled up the ship and put it back together in Pearl Harbor and went right just in time so they could be at the Battle of Okinawa, where they were also hit by a kamikaze and lost 44 men. My father lost his best friend right next to him. Right next to him is hit shrapnel right in this man's head. My father lost the top of his thumb. But of all the stories that my dad told me, the eeriest of all, and that we'll have a spiritual intent with this, was one that was concerning psychological warfare. And it was one concerning the voice of doubt. During World War II, there was a radio station. They didn't have all the devices we have now. They couldn't pick up American stations. And this radio station was called Radio Tokyo. And it broadcast with a tremendous wattage, several hundred thousand watts of power. This station was so powerful it could be heard throughout the entire Pacific. And they employed English-speaking announcers who would play contemporary American music, records, if you will. But they also offered up disinformation and demoralizing ramblings to any and all who were listening. Now, the most famous of all was a broadcaster known as Tokyo Rose. This is a picture of Tokyo Rose. This is actually her microphone that she used in the radio broadcast. It's in the National Archives. She looks innocent enough, doesn't she? She looks sweet. I don't feel threatened by Tokyo Rose. We'll talk about her a little bit here. She actually referred to herself, Tokyo Rose was the name that the sailors and military called her. She actually called herself Orphan Anne on the air after the famous comic strip of the time. But the U.S. servicemen referred to her as Tokyo Rose. Her real name was Eva Toguri. She was born on, of all days, the 4th of July. The day of our independence for the United States, a very important day of liberty. On the 4th of July, 1916, she was born in Los Angeles. She was born to Japanese immigrants. She was raised as a Methodist, familiar with Christian thinking. Listened to Orphan Annie and The Shadow on the radio. She was a member of the Girl Scouts. She played tennis for her local high school. She graduated from UCLA with a degree in zoology. She registered as a Republican and voted for Wendell Willkie in 1940. All in all, a successful young American young lady. But on July 5th, 1941, Eva Tagore boarded a ship, the Arabia Maru. And without a passport, she decided to visit her aunt in Japan. And when she attempted return in November of 1941, she could not document adequately that she was an American citizen. Now, on December 7th, 1941, you should know that day, the day that shall live in infamy, war broke out when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. Eva was now stuck in Japan as an American citizen, and this certainly could not have been an easy proposition, right? It had to be very, very scary. She had some tough choices to make. It was very tough times even for Japanese citizens, let alone for someone who was an American citizen. She was approached by the Japanese secret police. They asked her if she would be interested in a very special assignment to be a broadcaster for Radio Tokyo. She was given the promise of better food and better medicine than the average person. So she took the assignment. She sold her birthright as an American citizen for a little bit extra food and a little bit extra medicine. We know about selling the birthrights in the Bible, do we not? Can we be reminded of Esau, who had the potential for the blessings of his father, birthright blessings for nations, for destiny in the future of thousands of years, who sold his birthright for what? A bowl of soup. A convenient bowl of soup. We can think of Lot's wife, who gave up her life for what? A glance? A view? Or how about Judas? Judas, who was destined to be a king over one of the tribes of Israel for eternity. And he sold his birthright for 30 pieces of silver. Now, those pieces of silver in those days were about a half an ounce. I did the math here. The equivalent in today's dollars is about $300. Judas sold his birthright, sold out the Savior of mankind for $300. Do we have bowls of soup as individuals? Little bowls of soup? Things that rob us of our birthright? To be born in the very literal family of God for eternal life, eternal glory? It could be all multitudes of things. I've discussed this in the past. Could be pornography, could be drugs, could be laziness, could be... There's a panoply of choices of bowls of soup. Lots of different flavors of bowls of soup that we can take to give up our birthright. Tokyo Rose was broadcasting. The sailors of the Alpine were listening. They were just had left port. They were listening to music and the programming. And after a song had just finished, Tokyo Rose made this announcement. She said this: "Hello, sailors of the Alpine. Did you have fun while you were on Liberty? We know that you just left port. Too bad we have a submarine trailing you right this very moment. Isn't it terrible that you won't see your wives or your girlfriends or your family ever again? And now, a nice song for you to die by," as the music started to play. Well, of course, with great bragioso, the sailors of the Alpine said things back at the speaker that sailors would say. Let's leave it at that, and as sailors can do so well. Yet my father told me that when he went to bed that night, he actually kept his shoes on. The fact that indeed that somehow Tokyo Rose knew their name of their ship, that indeed they had just left port. And this was truth. She knew some truth. Perhaps there was a spy or a shore watcher that had relayed some information to Japan. Was it true that a submarine was following them? Were they going to die? He kept it to himself, but he was demoralized and he was frightened. See, truth had been mixed with lies. That is the most powerful voice of propaganda to hurt you in whatever endeavor that you do. Truth mixed with lies, and especially in the spiritual realm. And remember this, the enemy always wants you to be afraid. And that's because fear casts out love. Fear casts out love. And love is the ability to give everything. This is a great danger. All right, we've had a little history here today. What does it mean to us spiritually? Brethren, I want you to realize we're in a spiritual war. There's voices being bombarding at us at all times. We are indeed Christian soldiers. And I want you to know that all wars, physical and spiritual, are won between the ears first. They are won here, right here between our ears. And in this spiritual war, there's a spiritual Tokyo Rose who broadcasts 24 hours a day with large wattage. Let's take a look at Ephesians 6, verse 12. Ephesians 6, verse 12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. It's very real. Very, very real. Skip back a couple pages here to Ephesians 2, verse 2. It's much like a spiritual radio broadcast. Ephesians 2, verse 2. According to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. Yes, it's a spiritual broadcast mixed with both truth and lie together in an attempt to confuse and demoralize all of mankind, and especially us, the potential sons of God. John 8:44 says this, that Satan the devil is what? The father of all lies. He lies day and night. Lying is his nature. When you encounter lies and untruths, it is from the devil himself. Now, I knew when I played baseball, I liked baseball. And when I was a catcher in baseball and in high school, and I would always be able to confuse a hitter. I did my own little form of propaganda, if you will. And I told him before a pitch, I would say something like this. You know, the next pitch is going to be a curveball. And you know what? Sometimes, since I was the one calling the pitches, I'd let it be a curveball. Right? That's the next one's going to be a fastball. Maybe it was a fastball. Maybe it wouldn't be. It really would bother batters. I'd have batters yell at me and tell me to shut up. And sometimes they threw the bat in my face when they took off the first. But I knew this, that disinformation, mixing truth with lies, creates doubt and anxiety. And certainly it bothered batters. But here's a fact, friends. Our spiritual opponent wants you dead. Not just physically dead. He wants you dead for all eternity. He wants to kill your spirit. He will do and say anything to demoralize you and to get to you. Have you been listening to the spiritual Tokyo Rose broadcast lately? Sometimes I tune in by accident. Sometimes I'm caught unawares. I will confess. Have you heard the program where he says, the Church of God isn't going to make it? We're never going to do a great work? We've just got too many problems? Have you heard that broadcast? I've heard that broadcast on occasion. How about the program that tells you that you're never going to overcome your problems? You're never going to overcome your little illicit addictions or your illicit thoughts. You're no good. God doesn't love you. Why don't you just go and enjoy the world instead? Now I implore you, brethren, don't listen to the broadcast. Shut the radio off. Don't listen to the broadcast. Do not connect to lies. You know, we belong to the finest fighting fleet in the world today. We're on the largest battleship. We've seen some losses in the war, I understand. But the United Church of God is the largest Sabbatarian Holy Day organization in the world today. We are on the USS Enterprise. And we're in fine trim and in fine sail. All engines running full ahead, 35 knots. And you know who our leader is? It's Jesus Christ. He's like General MacArthur. Here's what General MacArthur said. He said this. He said, I shall return. And he was cast away from the Philippines. he made a promise and he shall return. You know who made that same promise 2,000 plus years ago? Jesus Christ. He shall return. You know, Paul Harvey always said the rest of the story. After World War II, Tokyo Rose was arrested and she was in prison for many years. And let me tell you something, after we win our war, we're going to imprison and chain the spiritual Tokyo Rose, Satan himself. And he will be bound 1,000 years for his deception of lies and the false voice. Now, I briefly wanted to relate another little family story, if I will. And just for a minute or two, these are actually relatives of mine. These are young Nazi soldiers, that's Wolfgang and Rolf. They were 15 and 17 when this picture was taken. And the backstory to this, how did my family members end up here? The Buchmüllers, on my mother's side, right after the Franco War, Charles and William came to New York. They were offered free land in Montana before it was even a state. And they were going to take up that offer. And when they got off the ship, a false voice happened to them. And it changed destiny. Two destinies. One destiny ended up here. Another destiny ended up with me, speaking to you today in a country with free religion. As they got off the ship, they were speaking German to each other. Not a popular thing to do in an Irish neighborhood. They got beat up. They got beat up severely. And William said, "You know what? I don't like this place." A voice told him to do away with that dream of owning land in Montana. And you know what he did? He immediately went right back on a ship and he went back to Germany. He made a decision, listening to the voice, crushing his hope. They did the best they can. They were decent people. But here were two young men. It's kind of scary because they kind of look like my sons. If you were to see my son Billy, my son Brad, I even sort of look like Wolfgang a little bit when in my younger days. Because of a decision of listening to a voice, the destiny. They fought on the Russian front. It was brutal, and they were just boys. The difference of our decisions and listening to voices, my point being, is this. We control destiny by our choices and the voices that we listen to. We do control destiny by the voices we listen to. You know, we live in a post-Christian America. I will admit that we have turned the tide to the point we are a post-Christian America, and I say that with great sadness. And I resent greatly the revisionism of history, another false voice, if you will, that tries to claim that this country was not born or based upon Judeo-Christian values. That's a lie. And you know, if that was true, that this country doesn't have Judeo-Christian roots and roots based on the Bible, then I have to inquire, why is it that every coin that we have, every currency bill that we have says, "In God we trust" on it? Anybody who wants to debate you on this, pull out the money. If you're putting it on the money, man, that's pretty important stuff, right? "In God we trust" we put on the money. Do you know every president of the United States has been sworn in on what? A Quran? No, it was the Bible. Maybe not understood the way we understand, but nonetheless. Every session of the Senate, every session of the Congress has been led in opening prayer by Christian clergymen since the founding of this country. And there's no less than 12 depictions of the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court, including the very chambers where there's the tablets with the Ten Commandments right on there. Now, if that's not the basis of our heritage, of where we were trying to come from as a people, I don't know what is. So I don't like these false voices that are out there trying to say, "Oh, the founding fathers, they really weren't men of God. They really didn't believe in the Bible. They were deists." I've done my homework on this. That's not true. That's a lie. I have found with George Washington, who right here is a quote, "It is impossible to rightly govern a nation without God and the Bible." I've read examples from his diary, over 88 references to God, including prayers, where he inquires for direction from both Jesus Christ and God the Father. Now, I want to tell you in the time I have remaining here a little bit about George Washington's famous crossing of the Delaware. Washington, and the lesson point will be that Washington refused to listen to the negative voice. Now, before the crossing of the Delaware, Washington had faced unbelievable opposition and unbelievable obstacles. In fact, he had lost virtually every battle that they had engaged up until that point. The army had shrunk down to just 2,500 men, and that's from over 30,000 that they had started with. 90% of the troops, they either had left through desertion, they had listened to the wrong voice, they died, or they just had an expiring enlistment and they went back home. Of the remnant, they were afraid. One third of them didn't even have shoes. They didn't have boots. They tried to get by taking burlap and wrapping it around their feet with string. It's been documented there literally was a trail of blood from where these men had marched. Before they attacked Washington, as he crossed the Delaware to attack the Hessians that were the German Hessian hired soldiers, Washington knew he must rally the troops. He read this to the troops. Powerful words. Powerful words that we need and should take to heart as God's soldiers. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in the crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have the consolation with us that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Oh, such beautiful words. God was with the young nation. We are a people of manifest destiny, make no doubt about it. And on that snowy Christmas night, they decided to attack. The Hessians being, of course, very vigorous engagers of Christmas. Not a very popular custom, by the way, amongst a lot of the colonials at the time, but certainly the German Hessians were. And that night they routed 800 professional Hessian soldiers, completely routed them. That night there was a secret password that was spread amongst the Patriot troops. And that password was this, so that you would know that they were on our side. The password was victory or death. Victory or death. For indeed it was true. And I have little doubt that the men who had their feet wrapped in burlap and bleeding knew that they either had to win or die and starve. And half-starved men in the snow knew well enough there was only going to be two fates that night, victory or death. And I repeat again from George Washington, tyranny like hell is not easily conquered. We live in tyranny today, friends, in the world, under oppressive Satan's government and his ways. Well, with this victory, 2 weeks later, Washington, with this faithful, dedicated victory, had over 15,000 brand new volunteers. It was just the shot of the arm that the colonials needed. The tide had been turned, and the war, of course, went forward, and here we are today. Now, the question we must ask ourselves of those who currently battle as Christians is this. Are we summer Christians and sunshine brethren? We face a system that's doing all that it can to remove faith in both God and country. Before us is the question, repeated just as it was offered 230 years ago. Victory or death? Now, the Bible puts it a slightly different way. And let me conclude with how the Bible puts it. It's in Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. Familiar verse to many of you. It reads this. This day I call the heavens and the earth as a witness against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and cursings. Now choose life. Choose life. Choose victory. Do not listen to the false voices. Choose life.